Hi, Mark.
Fuck off. This is the Super Podcast, and I'm Super Marcy, and I'm not quite normal, and we'll see how we go with this podcast. Hopefully it makes a little bit of sense. Before we get into what it's about, I'll introduce the guests, and I'll introduce the biggest little shit, Nick. So, hello, hi. Nick.
Hey. Oh, hi, Danny.
Hello.
Hi. You can now
and
call
why
me
am
Danny.
Why am I a little shit?
Because pre-show was you playing soundboards.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
I'm not Lisa, I'm Danny!
My mistake. Well, good to be back, and it's been a night of fun soundboards, so in case anybody doesn't understand what the hell's going on, so.
Yeah.
Hi, Marcy!
Oh, hi, Nick.
How are you?
Anyway. The other guest who, for some reason, decided to join us and probably regrets it is Kupka.
Kupka.
Oh, hi, Marcy.
Oh, hi, Kupka.
It's good to be back.
I hope so.
And I'm here to defend myself this time, unlike 2 weeks ago when some little big shit over there was talking smack.
Yeah, what
but
was
it's
that
all right.
about? I don't remember.
I just like to watch.
That's my line.
Oh.
Okay, the listening audience might be confused, but we're referencing that really shit movie called The Room. And apparently the last guest to introduce has seen a film worse than that. So I'll introduce...
You're laughing about it.
I don't even know what it is yet. I'll introduce the terrible Australian Bede.
Hi, Marcy. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Oh.
Sorry. Oh, hi, Bede.
Oh, hi, Marcy.
Oh, hi, Bede.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi, Dick. Hi, Kupka.
Oh, what a great story, Bede.
Oh, it won't be so great after this.
Tell us why you're terrible.
I know. Oh, man.
What's so terrible, Bede?
Oh, man. Now, before I reveal what my terrible pick of the week is, I must warn you, I didn't have one for a while, so I was just looking around on television to see what would be, like, seeing on cable to see what would be a good movie to pick, and, you know, I just stumbled across a movie that is so awful that it that it makes every other movie that I have seen beforehand in terms of my terrible picks look Citizen Kane in comparison.
Okay.
Anticipation.
Yes.
Tell us what it is.
Now, I must warn you, don't scream in fright once I reveal what it is. Don't think less of me once I reveal it. All right, I'll reveal it now. I'm a terrible Australian because I've seen, oh man, heaven help me, Hannah Montana, the movie.
Oh my God. This podcast is over. Cut the feed. Goodbye. Sayonara.
Now,
that was nice knowing all of you. I better get going.
Now,
yep.
Be honest, you enjoyed it, didn't you?
No, I didn't, honestly.
Sang along to all the songs.
I didn't, honestly.
How did you make it through that movie?
I'm a movie purist, so I have to, like, once I start watching a movie, I have to keep watching it until it ends, so, yeah, it wasn't a very fun experience.
You are worse than...
I just lost all my mad points. I've lost all dignity whatsoever.
I can't get it out.
Yep.
You're worse than Tommy Wiseau, or whatever the fuck his name is.
I was going to say, I will now refer to you as Bede Wiseau.
Well, that'll make a lot of sense.
Okay.
Are you fucking serious, man?
Nice chime there. Kupka was just sitting there in disbelief the whole time.
People are probably out there thinking, did you honestly watch that or watch any of the movies that you've seen? And yes, I have seen them.
Yeah, see, I thought Rock Band or whatever the hell it was called was bad.
Oh, no.
What now, was it? Is that what it's called?
Camp Rock.
Camp Rock, whatever.
This one's more intolerable than that movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't want to talk about it anymore. I've already lost all dignity whatsoever.
The topic of the podcast is not actually Hannah Montana or The Room.
That is sad.
We're actually going to talk about the Predator film series and then Inception.
Oh, yeah.
So to start off, we'll discuss the first two Predator films and then we'll go on to the new one, Predators. So I think it's safe to say that we all like the first Predator film.
This is me, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Really?
Yes, we did really like it.
Yes, yes we do. Yes.
Yep. I absolutely love Predator. I'm just making sure everyone knows that. Love Predator.
Well, the movie has been discussed several times on the podcast because I did do an Arnie podcast and then we did do the films that we were from the year we were born in, and Predator was out when Nick was born, so...
Correct. Yeah, it was. It was, I remember my dad even telling me, like, he left me with, I think it was my grandmother for a few hours so he could go see it with my mom. he was absolutely dying to see. He was literally dragging my mom out the door.
Yeah. That's a great story.
That's a great story.
All right. About but Predator.
Yes, fantastic movie.
Why do you think that it became such, I guess, an iconic movie?
Well, are we going to just go around in a circle?
Yes, we will.
Okay,
you can go earlier. First.
Oh, we'll start with you, Pete. But,
just talk, Nick. Talk. You're going first.
God damn it, you didn't want me to talk, now you want me... Okay, never mind.
I'm picking on you, so talk.
I think Predator, although I know a lot of, like, Alien fans out there, the original Alien series fans, aren't big fans of Predator. They actually see it as a big ripoff, but I remember Sigourney Weaver calling the Predator the Alien Hedgehog or something like that. I think that's when the first Alien vs. Predator movie came out. But anyway, I think it was very original for its time, and I think it was definitely something that no one had ever seen before. It was, it's even hard to describe. I mean, you had these, you know, hardened veterans who, you know, go out into the forest and you think nobody can fuck with them. There's not a thing on this earth that could kill these guys. There's not, you know, couldn't hunt them, couldn't do anything to them. But to our surprise, there is something not of this earth that hunts them and kills them one by one in the most horrific ways. And it just, I don't know. I don't know whether it's the ultimate guy movie or it's just the ultimate badass alien. It's just a combination of a lot of things. So it's definitely one that always sticks out in our minds as one of the best.
Okay.
In my opinion.
It's
almost hard to describe the different elements that are so cool about the movie.
Okay. Bede, what are your thoughts on Predator being an iconic movie?
Well, Predator is just an awesome sci-fi action horror movie in so many ways. I mean, it actually, what I love about the film is that when I rewatched it again the other day, for the first half, probably the first hour or so of the movie, you never see what the Predator looks like. So it takes that sort of Jaws element and never actually shows what the Predator looks like until about probably towards the last half of the movie. So you're kind of thinking, what the hell is this thing that's killing off all these badass soldiers? And it has a sense of mystery about that. And once the Predator is actually revealed, it's quite an interesting and unique creation brought together by the legendary and Stan Winston. So, and also it's just some got cool, rememberable characters, great action scenes, and a lot of suspense, and just an awesome finale where it has Arnie going up against the Predator. And if you honestly think about it, the Predator actually really does kick Arnie's ass in this movie. So it's probably one of the only few times that you get to see Arnie getting his ass kicked by anyone in a movie. And that's what I absolutely love about the film.
Yeah, but he makes his comeback, though, because he tells the Predator that he's an ugly motherfucker. You can't beat that.
But isn't he, though?
Well, I certainly wouldn't go out with the Predator.
But, and that's the beauty of that scene, because he's basically relaying what the audience is saying the moment we see it. Whoa. It's like, what the fuck? It's so horrific looking, and you're like, but you're so in awe of how badass it looks.
Mm.
But, yeah, and I agree with that. And that's what I love about with Arnie, you know, the group. For the first, it's exactly what Beat said. The first half of the movie is basically showing you how fucking badass this group is. They shoot up that entire camp, kill 100 bad guys. You think they're untouchable. And then this thing starts in and it just gets, you know, suspenseful. And it's just really, really, really good.
And Kupka, what are your thoughts on Predator? And if you haven't seen it, I'll punch you in the face.
No, I have seen it many times.
Thank God.
There's really not a whole lot I can say that, you know, these two haven't already. It's just, it brought the whole man versus beast thing to a whole new level, you know, because it was, you know, we have seen so many alien movies up to that point, you know, even with Alien and Aliens, but it was different. It was in, you know, Aliens was, you were enclosed in a spaceship. You know, you had that claustrophobia there where you're in the fucking jungle. You're in this confined area, yet it's so huge because you know nothing about where you're at, that it was awesome.
No matter which direction you turn, you're not getting out, basically.
Right. Yeah.
You're always limited.
Yep. And it's one of my all time favorites. Hands down.
Hands down.
And what about you, Marcy?
What about me? Well, from a, I guess, a female point of view, because this is seen as like the ultimate guy movie, but I like it because I like these kind of movies. It starts off with something, it's kind of like B said, it's something a bit different. You see all these badasses and, you know, what could possibly kill the badasses, and that's kind of like you're wondering what it is when, you know, when it's the first time you're watching it, and then slowly you find out what it is. But it's a different kind of alien movie, I guess, because it's not about an alien invasion and it's not about an alien taking over a human's body or something like that. It's completely different. It's just the one alien. And he's going to kill you.
Yeah. That's, he has an agenda. It's an alien. It's a monster film with an agenda.
Mm.
There's the Predator is there to do something. It, you know, it's not just the alien being there and, you know, looking for fresh meat. It, you know, it's the Predator wants to kill you for a reason, or it doesn't want to kill you for a reason. It's just those little special. The Predator is a character. It's developable, you know, it can be developed in so many different ways, and that's one thing they explored a lot throughout the series of films, throughout the trilogy, and that was what was great about it.
Mm. So, moving on from the first film, we'll talk about Predator 2, and I think this film, it's either I love it or hate it, because I know a lot of people that really hate it.
Yeah.
But then I know a lot of people that really love it. So,
well, I've actually never seen it for fear of hating it.
Ew. Interesting.
Really? Yes. Yes. I remember when I first stumbled across it, probably back when it first hit video, and because I loved the first one so much, I was like, ooh, you know, and I saw, and at the time it wasn't so much that who he was, I really didn't know who he was. I saw Gary Busey and New York City, and I was like, fuck that, I'm not watching this. But since then, I've grown, you know, obviously learned a lot more about movies and have been wanting to revisit it, just never have.
Well, that's, and you know, it's interesting how you say that, because like right at the beginning of the film, it kind of teases you, because it opens up with a shot of what appears to be a jungle. So you think that you're back in the jungle and it's pretty much where we left off, and then it pans up and there's, you know, sweltering hot Los Angeles, and you know, and then the Predator title comes in and you're like, oh fuck, you know, oh shit, now we're gonna be fighting in a city.
Yeah. It's kind of like a
completely different movie.
It's kind of like, you know how they moved Jurassic Park in, I think it was the second one, to the city.
Yeah.
It's like that dread. You're like, oh fuck, they're gonna like have all this shit, but it's not like what you'd expect, because we follow the cops, and the main one being what's his name, Danny Glover, and they're investigating it's a gang of like
Colombians.
Yeah,
were they Colombians or Jamaicans?
I was thinking of Jamaicans, actually.
Oh, it's the Colombians and the Jamaicans, because they're in a, like a war between each other. Right.
Yeah, yeah, and there's like weird killings and drugs and more weird stuff. And you're thinking like, where the fuck is the Predator gonna come into it all?
Yeah,
but it will make sense when you watch it. But it's not like what you'd expect, and
it is pretty fucking violent, though.
It is quite violent, and it is really gross. There are some gross parts, but we see, I think, a little bit more of the Predator, and we do get to see I guess this is kind of like spoilers, the spaceship that they came in, and some other Predators. We get to see those, and we see they have different, like, mask things, and we see their trophy room.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that scene, that's what actually spawned Alien versus Predator, and we are not discussing those movies because they are shit. No, we are not.
That is blasphemy, and it is a sin to mention those films.
And I never saw them because I never saw part two.
Well, don't see them, because it's a waste of your fucking time.
Yeah.
To put it
you are.
Oh, it's probably better than the Hannah Montana movie.
You just had to bring that up.
Yeah, that I can...
No, you had to bring that up.
Oh, that's true.
Can we not mention her fucking name anymore?
Exactly.
Okay. I do not understand how she became famous. It just, it doesn't... whatever.
Okay, Predator 2, did you like it? Go.
Better than Hannah Montana. Okay, there you go. But yeah, it was definitely a very different tone from the first movie, which is good, because they didn't just flat out copy the, you know, first movie. There was a lot of very unique kills. There was a lot of pretty funny, cool dialogue. I mean, Danny did a good job for what he had.
Yeah, he was showing us he ain't too old for this shit.
No, he wasn't. Even though like half the cast of Lethal Weapon is in the movie, even the police chief captain is from the Lethal Weapon movies, is in Predator 2, and you actually see him at the beginning, then freaking Gary Busey, and on from there, but no, it was definitely good. I the only thing I didn't like about the movie was the ending, to be honest with you. Spoiler alert, but, like, the ship takes off and they leave. I just thought that was so anticlimactic.
Just a little bit.
A little bit. And then there's Bill Paxton.
Yeah, he decided to be in the Alien sequel and then the Predator sequel.
And he has to be just as equally annoying in both.
He wears the worst suits ever.
And everybody's sweating in this. It's like the hottest fucking summer in the city ever. Everybody's sweating, like, constantly.
Yeah, like, it must have been really, really hot. Either it was that or everyone was thinking about me. So
exactly. We all get hot.
Indeed. Anyway.
But that's not what this podcast is about.
No.
we'll save that for the
damn it. I'm leaving.
Okay.
But nope, good show though.
Bede, do you like Predator 2?
I actually really like Predator 2. I actually think it's quite an underrated movie in in a lot of ways. And it's with Danny Glover. He in the movie. What's funny though, because when I rewatched, because I was rewatching this one and the first one before a week ago, And it's funny is like, even though Danny Glover has played a lot of cop characters, and of course he made Murtaugh in the Lethal Weapon movies, but this, his character of Hartigan in Predator 2 is like the Riggs. He's like playing Riggs in this one, and that's what
makes his... psycho.
Yeah, he's the psychotic cop who gets the job done. Like, he doesn't play by the rules.
Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, and he's really good in it, and Gary Busey, really over the top, but he's pretty fun too, and he delivers some pretty kind of hilarious lines as well. And
oh yeah,
well, I think,
it's like the tigers.
It's the jungle, the tigers, bears. Oh my! And there's some real, and there's just a lot of great scenes in the movie. I love the train scene where it's like where the Predator just like attacks a bunch of people on a train, and it's pretty awesome.
Actually, that was pretty cool. I like the want some candy line.
Oh, I just thought that was... That's just creepy, that line. That's That was like the creepiest line the Predator ever mimicked in the films.
Agreed.
And also the last half. Like, the last half of the movie, because it's like Danny Glover going up against the Predator, and it's like they have showdown. And it's actually quite an over-the-top like fight that they have. Like, well, it's a... The last half is like an entire fight sequence, but it's pretty over the top. And what's funny, though, is the first thing I thought of after I watched it was, man, Danny Glover actually kicked the Predator's ass much more than Arnie did in the first film.
Oh, yeah, he's cutting shit off of him, slicing him up. But he had tools available to him that that Arnie didn't quite have. So.
Excuse me, Arnold has himself. That should be enough.
Arnold is his biggest tool.
He has himself and his mod. And his gym equipment. And the big giant-ass tree log, yeah.
And also those bows and arrows that he somehow made an entire afternoon.
Oh, I love that. Those things are awesome.
And Danny Glover, he has like this little miniature shotgun that he carries around, and I always thought that was a pretty awesome gun.
That was sweet. He just opens up his trunk, and you expect to, you know, big ass guns to be like inside the trunk, but no, he lifts up the lid, and it's like put in Velcro. It's like,
there's like hundreds of small guns in there, and it's just like this little miniature handheld shotgun that just looks so awesome. It's like a child's toy shotgun or something, and it did so much damage.
He fucks it up pretty good with that thing, I will admit. The fight in the meat locker is without question.
That's a great
one
scene.
Of the coolest scenes of the films. It introduced a lot of cool Predator weapons that were actually throughout the entire movie. Even when he kills all those Jamaicans in that apartment building or whatever they were, where that couple was banging.
sacrificing and whatever.
The only tits and ass you'll see in the series.
Exactly. But, it was definitely a worthy sequel, I thought. It was definitely a different, very different tone from the first one.
Well, I think they wanted to do something different.
Yeah, exactly.
Which brings us to Predators.
Oh, awesome.
I thought you were going to do something there, but okay.
What were you expecting?
I thought you were really going to lose it.
Stop whining.
No, I'm not whining. I thought you were going to lose your pants.
Yes.
Okay. Say, Predators. Awkward silence.
Who do you want to start?
I'm lost.
Well, what did you think of the movie, Marcy?
Thank you, Bede. Someone has to try and get control of this thing.
Thank you, Bede.
I liked Predators. No, really. I liked the movie because it was badass and it was a bit different than the other ones. And it totally, made up for the shit of the AVP crap.
Yeah.
That's basically an easy way to sum it up.
I like the way it pretty much ignored that the other films even existed.
Yeah. And
to a point.
This one kind of introduced some different things, like with the predators and like the different, I guess this is like spoilers, but I think that's what you'd expect when, you know.
Yeah, I mean, are we essentially just discussing no holds barred here?
Well, pretty much. I mean, if you don't want to know, turn the podcast off.
It's been out for a couple weeks now. I think we're okay in that
boat. But they introduced like the different class of predators and they actually look different. And they've got predator dogs, which was really cool. And it made for some cool scenes.
Yeah.
And they show that they don't just put humans on the planet because it takes place on their, like, hunting planet. They take other life forms and put them on there to hunt.
That was the aspect of the movie that I loved the most. And I thought that was really clever of Robert Rodriguez, who wrote it. It's like not just humans, but everything you could possibly imagine. You know, there are different aliens all over the place, and each of them, you know, kill each other off, and then the predators watch and see what you do and adapt to you. And it was really clever. And I just love the fact that they returned to that, you know, primal, instinctive hunting type feel to the film, like the first movie.
I agree with you.
Awesome.
What I was really looking forward to was seeing that in, not that I've seen anything but the first one, but seeing, knowing how good the first one was being in a jungle, that, you know, knowing that it was in a jungle, it instantly, my expectations were raised.
Yeah.
And they really made sure to make this jungle look different than anything else we might have seen. Because they kind of start to realize, because, I mean, the movie just, it doesn't, like, introduce you to anything. It just puts you there and all of a sudden someone's falling down into the jungle.
Yeah.
And you're along for the ride with the characters. They don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. So it's all
We start to realize, like, every point in the film is like a test. I mean, even when they're crashing down to the planet, it's a test. Like, you have to wake up and activate your, you had to activate your parachute so you didn't, you know, crash into the ground. And, you know, and another thing it was great was the fact that I remember reading about this after I saw the movie, is the fact that every character in the movie is almost the exact opposite of the characters in the first movie, where, you know, they were all muscle bound, you know, big, tough, strong guys,
right,
in
mercenary types.
Yeah, exactly. But then in Predators, the new one, they were all, you know, scrawny, you know.
Except for that Russian guy. He was pretty big.
Yeah, he was the only one. He was actually really good, actually. Well,
Danny Trejo's a big dude, too.
Danny is, actually. That's true. And he didn't appear that way in the movie. Not like Michelle.
No, he didn't. I was surprised. He didn't look as big as he has recently.
No. But, I loved his death scene. I thought that was one of the...
That was quite creepy, the way that was done.
Yeah, I was... I had the thought in my head that that's what was going on. But the fact that even though I had an idea when she shot him, it was, and it still happened, it was like, that is fucking awesome.
And that was... And it was... I think it was the cinematography that really made that scene, because they walk up and they see him and he's in the... He's dead center in the middle of this very open patch, and it's a big wide shot, and there's little tiny Danny sitting right in the center, and all you hear is this little faint, you know, cry for help, and it's like, ooh, like the whole audience, I remember every one of us were just on edge. Everyone was dead silent. You almost knew.
Mm.
And then Brody's character is smart enough to see it.
Yeah, his character's the one that knows everything, or he can at least figure out everything.
And it's always gotta be one of those guys.
But it worked because it was the type of character that should. When he's in that line of work, he should know everything. So that, you know, that it was able to work in this situation.
Yeah. Mm.
Hunting is hunting no matter what you are hunting. And that was one of my favorite parts with him, is when they arrive at the Predator camp and automatically he's, you know, they call him a son of a bitch for, you know, pretty much treating them as bait. But he had a point. He had to know, you know, who are we dealing with? And he learned so much and, you know, and things like that. That's
And he was trying to bring them to his level by doing that, trying to get them to understand the same thing. Like, you can't be pissed off.
Yeah.
No. Like, we're in deep fucking shit here.
Stick with that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was quite an odd choice for the movie, but it seemed to work out pretty well.
Yeah, it paid off really well, actually. Ike was convinced that he was a pretty big, awesome badass.
Well, he was very badass, at least at the end, when he's got no shirt on and you're like, shit, he totally got in shape for the movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah. After the first 2 minutes, I was convinced. I was like, I love Adrian Brody as a badass.
Mm.
I think he really did nail it, and they gave him the perfect weapon to use, and it was just that, you know, the big fucking powerful, you know, shotgun and shit like that, and he just handled himself really well. I think he just came off as a great leader.
Yeah, exactly. And
you know, it's
go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's interesting that you bring up that the gun, because that type of gun, because of the way it, I mean, it's A, so explosive, but B, you have to know, you know, your aiming has to be 100%. There's really not a scope on that with something that large and the type of projectile it does. So it just, you know, it added to that character.
Exactly. It's just everything about him is very precise. I mean, he's always, he's a step ahead of everybody, but he doesn't exactly share that. And that's one thing that they, you know, they don't trust him with, but clearly he knows what he's doing.
Okay. What I was going to say is, what do you guys think of the female lead, which was Alice, whatever her last name is. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Alice Braga.
It was fine. I don't think if it were a guy, it would have been better if it was a guy, but what you wouldn't have gotten, because it would have been a weird situation, was the turn with Topher Grace's character.
Yeah.
It would have been a different scenario altogether.
If he had done that to a guy.
Well, right. Then you would have been like, these two guys are totally like got a bromance going.
Yeah. That's what it would have been. Kind of like, it'd be more unbelievable, like, it'd be less believable if he had done that to, you know, a guy.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the thing, and that's what I loved about afterwards, because Brody starts to catch on to his bullshit, and when Topher makes his move, Brody fucking finishes him in the... I was, like, almost ready to fucking cheer. I was like, oh my god!
He was warned.
He was.
Yeah, he did. He had no idea.
He's like, yeah, I know you're sick, but I'm fast.
but she warned him before he actually got to cut... Adrian Brody's character.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't like Topher's character, to be honest with you. I thought it was kind of a... I don't know. It was kind of a waste. I don't know. Do you guys agree with me? Do you think, like, his character was that necessary?
I thought so.
I thought, like, the prison guy was more like his character.
I think it was done to show that there's more than just a traditional type of character. Even though a movie like this, you think, you know, there's just, you know, the mercenary or, you know, the Yakuza or, you know, something like that, where there actually are other types of predators out there that work just as hard and are as smart. And I know a lot of people complain about those two characters, but I thought it worked well. It's just kind of a, not really a wake up, but, you know, hey, you know, look at something different, an actual predator that could actually, that you would relate to, because that's something that could happen to you in real life, as opposed to, you know, soldiers are a smaller group where that wouldn't happen.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that. And he is the complete polar opposite, because you see him, he's like, I'm a doctor and I don't know why I'm here and things like that. And that's what I loved about him in that regard. It's just, I thought his big reveal was a little, I don't know, obvious.
It was, yeah, but My take on it, I don't like Topher Grace.
I've never liked him either.
I think it's pretty obvious that I don't like him because I kind of pay him out a lot. but I was surprised that I actually kind of liked him in this movie. And I wished his reveal might, like, could have been a bit, like, they should have done it earlier on in the film, and he should have really fucked with more of the characters. Because you kind of pick up on it when he gets that Russian guy to save him, but then he totally, like, leaves him for the Predator.
Well, that's the whole, and that's exactly what I was going to say, Mars, because I think he should have been fucking with their heads throughout the entire thing, like you said. But we the audience, should have known who he was and what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I think that would have made a much cooler impact, because you're absolutely right. He was manipulative right from the beginning with everybody.
He fucked around with everyone. And it's not, like, it wasn't as obvious as it was with the Russian dude.
No.
And then you kind of, like, really start picking up on it when he gets hurt later on and stuff.
Yeah, he uses the picture of his kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you fucking scumbag. It's
but
like,
I could totally buy him in a movie where he plays, like, a serial killer like that.
He was I agree with you, and I was shocked at his performance, too. And a lot of people had, again, you know, like I said, weren't happy with it. But I could never see him outside of that 70s show role. No matter what he's done, even in Spider-Man 3, I thought it was the worst possible choice.
Tell me about it.
But this role, once the reveal happened, I gained more respect for that character of what he was doing throughout. Like, at first it was like, okay, he's an annoying fucking dude. Why is he here? It doesn't make sense. And then when you find out why it makes sense, it just made it that much better.
Exactly.
That's true, and that's the thing. And he did do a good job. I didn't like Topher. I thought he was really good. I just thought the reveal could have been done better. But then again, you never know. It was still very, very cool, and I thought Alice really acted out well. You know,
well, I thought right she was sort of, really, really good.
She was hot, but no, she was she was really like she was actually. There are a lot of, you know, action chicks that, you know, come out of nowhere and they try to act tough, and you just don't buy it sometimes in movies. But
she was convincing. You can tell, like, that she knows how to handle herself, and she knows how to handle her sniper rifle. You just know from the very beginning that this woman has been in battles and been in wars and all that. And you can see it even without her not doing anything that's badass. You can just sense it right away as soon as you see her. Like the way how
she reminds me of Michelle Rodriguez in the way that it's believable, badass. Yeah.
She even kind of looks like her from a distance.
Well, but it's like the believable female badass.
So. Yeah. Man, Michelle would have been really good in that too.
They could have had a break in it.
They all actually really felt their filled the role of their characters rather well.
I love
the guy who plays the prisoner, the guy on death row. I cannot remember his name, but
Walton Goggins or whatever.
Walton Goggins.
From the Shield. Everything.
He's key. You can definitely, it was funny watching his performance in the movie, because like every time he just makes some kind of comment, you can, like, at first it's going to, you're thinking, and then he says something else, you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like he wants to get out. It's like he wants to get out and rape women, and you're thinking, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm going
to
rape some bitches and do a mountain of cocaine.
Yeah, yep. What a laugh of it, but at the same time, you don't want to.
Well, I laughed my ass off at the cocaine line, and then when he said, it's 5 o'clock, it's time to rape some bitches, it's like, that's not funny.
Yeah, but exactly. Topher made that funny, though, because he's like, yeah.
He did.
Yeah. Definitely. 5 o'clock, I want to rape some bitches. Yeah.
He was a total, like, weirdo character, but you could kind of, like, work that out because he was in, like, the yellow jumpsuit. And I thought it was fucking hilarious that they all have these weapons and he gets, like, this little knife.
Well, I love how he complains about it in the movie. He's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's too funny.
You get a gun, I get nothing.
He had the best death scene of the entire
movie. Oh my god, that death scene was fucking awesome.
I definitely had chills.
I was almost cheering, but I thought maybe I should shut up because no one else is. It was awesome.
You know what was funny? When, before his death scene happened, I was just thinking, when is a predator going to steal someone's head? And all of a sudden, 5 seconds later,
yeah.
Oh, he doesn't just steal that head. He takes it all. Mm. And then there's the Yakuza guy who I fucking loved.
He didn't say anything for most of the movie. And just his face, you could just like feel... This guy is like badass and something awesome is going to happen.
Yeah. Like he is. He's like a total badass. I mean, you can tell this guy's a badass as soon as he takes his shoes off and like just gets his feet off the ground of the jungle. He wants the feel of the place.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it was so much that or was it the fact that he stepped in something and made noise? I couldn't, because that's what I got from it.
Yeah, well, I was thinking it was a strategy of traveling, you know?
Or perhaps he was in a place that wasn't his home or something foreign about it.
Yeah, he knows something's off. Like when you watch the movie, from the very beginning, unlike the others, he knows that something's off and he like senses that they're being watched in some way.
Right.
Yeah.
He can tell that from the very beginning.
Okay.
Yes.
He was like the Billy of this movie from...
Yeah. They changed it up to different... They changed up they kept the character type, but they switched it to a different race of character.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. I thought that was cool.
And a bit of a different mentality, because he was actually much calmer and cooler than Billy. Mm-hmm. Billy was a bit of a nutball.
Like, he was.
He didn't have a chance facing the Predator, whereas the Yakuza guy actually had a really good chance in probably one of the best standoffs in a long time. But, I thought his character... Every fucking character in the entire movie was great. Even the... it's too bad that black guy, I can't remember what his background was, but he was really good, too, and, his appearance was short-lived, but... everybody had a role. Like, Rodriguez... definitely was right on the ball when he said every character could have a prequel story, of how they got to that point. And then there was Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, yeah. I was actually not surprised that he was in the movie. Like, we all knew he was in the movie, but I was really surprised on his take of the character because I thought, oh, he's just going to be, Lawrence Fishburne being a badass. But when you actually meet his character, like
he's nuts.
He's a complete nut job. He's completely insane.
I know a lot of people who are actually very disappointed in that, by the way.
Like, I thought he was going to be in the entire movie. Instead, he's in it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, he is.
In something almost felt a little bit useless, but it did develop the other characters.
Very.
So right.
It was necessary.
He was definitely well used. Was he underused? He might have been, but he was definitely perfectly placed.
I thought you got to think to yourself, he's been there for, I think he said, like 10 seasons. Like, you'd be fucking nuts, too, like having to be paranoid every waking hour.
But how long is 10 seasons? Because right when the movie ended,
another season
was coming in. Right.
But then again, the whole thing was kind of put on a fast track since those two managed to kill all three of them. So who knows?
Yeah.
But, it's just every waking day, you go nutty as well, too.
I
noticed this while I was watching the movie. Like, he's been on the planet for 10 seasons, and this is a plot hole that I picked up. Like, he's been on the planet for 10 seasons, right? So he'd have to survive, on a planet where he's not sure what food he's eating and all that. How is he still fat in the movie if he's been on the planet for so long?
Maybe he eats the predators.
I didn't see that as being fat. I saw that as the like body type of what Billy had in the original. Like that, he wasn't muscular. He was just big.
Big, yeah.
And he's wearing a lot of armor and shit, too, so I don't know.
I mean, as long as you're eating something, if you keep working out or, you know, keeping yourself in shape, you should stay that way.
Yeah, you're not going to lose muscle. As long as you can keep eating, you're not going to lose muscle mass. And you may get a little fat. Like, who knows?
I just figured, you know, like, I'm just looking at it like the Castaway kind of thing. Like, you've been in a place for so long, you probably lose weight.
That would be so awesome if you had the volleyball.
No, I was thinking more along the lines of Lost, how, I don't know if you guys ever watched it, but the character of Hurley, he's on a desert island, but he seems to get fatter as the show goes on.
Well, they keep finding those skids full of fucking food, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but apparently he eats everyone's food.
Yeah.
So, fuck knows.
I did think the same thing, though, about the, you know, his body weight until the very end. And I was like, oh, well, apparently 10 seasons isn't 10 years, because when he said that, I'm drinking water you need, you know. Yeah. But then, so I don't think it's years. I think it's consecutive. I just think they keep bringing them in. And, you know, the human condition, if you deal with that shit 10 times, you're going to be a little fucked in the head.
Yeah. I would be.
I don't think it's really clear how long a season is. It could be anything. It's just, I think it's possibly when the hunting is over and then they'll do it again, or...
Or maybe,
or
like
possible,
a...
Like, or I was going to say, it's possible that all the, like, because at the very end, when Adrian Brody and Alice Braga's characters look up to the sky and you can see, like, parachutes coming down, that might not be the start of a new season. That could be, like, the other Predators descending more for the other three down there to kill.
Yeah, it could still be the season going on, so...
The end of the season is when the base, when all the other creatures stop coming in, basically.
Mm.
So, you know...
It could be.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Yeah, it could be. Because they said it was decomposed for about 2 weeks. So
yeah,
that could be, though.
But maybe we'll find out more in the sequel that's been greenlit or whatever.
Yeah, Rodriguez said it's coming.
Yep, indeed.
I think it was actually the highest grossing Predator film of them all. It actually made well over what it cost.
What was its budget?
I think it was $38 million. That's from
it just beat it then here. Last weekend.
Yep.
Because it finally hit 43.
Yeah, so it made its budget back. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing about Rodriguez. He can make movies for fucking pennies. Yeah. You know.
No, I'm really happy to hear that. I really do want another one.
Another good one, anyway.
See how they take it.
Yeah.
Is there any... I want to say this, because there's one of the few things I didn't like about the movie. Did anyone have a vision in this movie? Because I love the Predator vision, you know, they're when they see the body heater. I just did not like it in this movie. It just looked too clean and too polished, and I love the look of it in the first two films, even in the AVP films. They looked good in that, but in this one, it just looked horrible looking.
I didn't really notice, so.
I don't know, I thought it was gritty enough. Like, yeah, it did look good, like, on some of the close-up shots, but... No, never really bothered me.
No, I just want to look better in the earlier movies.
I can see that.
I can see why you think that.
I do love the fact that you bring up the thermal vision as quick as you did, though, because the end scene when he went the route of the fire instead of the mud to fuck it up, and they just showed you... I know the first thought that was in my head, and then 30 seconds later, he was adapted to find where he was. I thought that was so awesome. Just because I don't remember them doing that in the first movie. Where obviously you knew that they adapted to the environment, but that quickly was just phenomenal.
And they actually, I think it was in the, I don't know if they actually did it in the second Predator movie, but yeah, they started showing other spectrums of vision, like the infrared, the thermal, the... all, you know, all different sorts. And even in, like, the video games that they had for Alien vs. Predator, they had those different spectrums. But yeah, I'm glad, really happy that they showcased that as soon as, you know, realized, you know what, I'm fucked. I can't see him. So I'm just going to flip through, you know, my different settings and see, you know, try to find him a different way. But yeah, it was really, really fucking good.
Well, I think.
I was just going to say, sorry. Yeah, it made $95 million worldwide, and it only cost $38.
Awesome. Okay.
Well, that's
so good. That's an awesome number.
Well, I was going to say, I think that probably wraps up the Predators discussion. So we'll head into a different kind of discussion with Inception, which I think is a film that we've all been eagerly waiting for, and it's finally come out.
Oh boy.
So this one's probably a bit more complicated.
Yeah, if you haven't shut off the podcast because you really didn't care about Predators and you haven't seen Inception, I would highly recommend stopping right now.
I agree. You can't go into this movie without spoiling. And, you know, it has to be done.
You have to go into this movie not knowing anything. Don't, you know, even watching the trailers, just don't.
Gives away too much.
I don't even know where to start with Inception, really.
I guess basic thoughts.
Phenomenal.
Brilliant.
I was going out of town that weekend, and we were leaving that Friday night, and so I was just going to wait and see it Tuesday morning when we got back, and I'm so glad I got convinced to go to a midnight show, because holy fuck, was this movie amazing.
I know, it. I went to see the opening night, not the Thursday night, but just the Friday night opening IMAX, and I can't even put in words. I actually sat through the credits in a daze. I was trying to process everything I'd just seen. And I remember doing the same thing after The Dark Knight, but with Inception, it was just on a whole different level. It just, man, what a fucking movie that makes you think and makes you, you know, reflect. And Nolan's the king of the world. You know, Cameron can say all he wants with the money, but Jesus, fuck. That guy could put a film together.
Oh, yeah. It's just amazing. It's just, Christopher Nolan, he's just a consistently amazing director. I mean, the man has never made a bad movie thus far. I mean, every one of his movies is either great or amazing.
Yeah, it is. And, like, it was just like The Prestige, which I thought was a masterpiece of storytelling. And, you know, he fucks with your head throughout the entire movie and he throws things at you. Like, I remember at the beginning of Prestige when, you know, you hear Christian Bale's voice, you know, "Are you watching closely?" And I just remember leaning forward in my seat like, "Oh, you fucker. You're messing with me already." And, yeah, just Inception, unbelievably creative detail yet explained in the simplest possible way so that anyone can understand what was happening.
Yeah. That was the amazing thing I found about the movie. It's like going into it, you like hear about all these reviews all saying it's a bit confusing, it's hard to follow. But when I was watching it, yeah, it's complex, but I actually found it so easy to follow.
Yeah, so did I.
Like, absolutely.
I think it was, you know, probably people who don't like watching movies that make them think probably what was confusing, but it was just so easy to follow. And that's the amazing thing about Nolan. He makes complex stories that are easy to follow.
Always, yeah.
Yeah, the intellectual can still talk about it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Film is just like all of his previous films, from Memento to Insomnia to Batman Begins, Prestige and The Dark Knight, all those movies were just like having him ready for this movie. Like, you can see, like it has, like with Leonardo DiCaprio's character, his internal struggle is kind of similar to that of Leonard Shelby's in Memento, and how it's has stories within stories, as in with The Prestige, and just the epic scope in the action movie, the action scenes of The Dark Knight and Batman Begins. You can see all that into this movie. Like, he was, like, preparing himself with those movies to make this one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And now he's going straight into Batman 3, and it's like, holy shit, he could one-up himself again. You know? And that's all he continues to do. And I'm always afraid that one day he's going to make a film that isn't going to live up to expectations and it's going to crash. But yeah. I hope that never happens with him.
Well, I was going to say that with Inception, that it's a kind of movie where you can pretty much make your own conclusions about what it means and what the ending means and all those kinds of things, because I don't think there's any, like, one correct answer. I think it's something that you can really decide for yourself and you're not going to be wrong. Unless you say something really stupid in interpretation, but...
Well, Chris Nolan has created his unicorn from Blade Runner. You know, he's created that moment in a film where film students decades from now are still going to be asking him, what did that mean? You know, was Quaid dreaming at the end of Total Recall? You know, what did the unicorn mean in Blade Runner? All these different things. Nolan officially has his moment. And it's that ending to Inception with the top.
So, if you managed to process the movie, what are, like, your guys', like, interpretations of it? We'll just go around to everybody, and I'll just let, I don't know, Bede go first.
Why does it always have to be me, man?
Because I'm putting you on the spot, man.
Okay.
Because two of us are talking too much.
Yeah. Okay. I guess there's kind of two ways you can look at it, because there's Marcy knows about this. There's this great article that Devin Faraci from Chud.com wrote up about what his interpretation of the movie is, and it's a really fascinating read, and which I recommend you guys and everyone out there listening to us right now should read. And in fact, after reading that, I'm not sure what to make of the, like, I have my own conclusion what it'd be. Is the real world in which Leonardo DiCaprio's character is in, is that real, or is that a dream world that he is in? Like, there's so many ways you can look at it. That's what I love about the movie, because you're not really sure when you watch the movie, because I actually saw it twice in the same day. That's how totally insane I am. You can pick up the clues. Like, even in the real world scenes, there's some little clues there that sort of that show that it might not actually be the real world. Like, there's a scene where he's in I can't remember which city he's in. He's that chase scene where he's running.
Oh, when he's recruiting Tom Hardy.
Yeah, Tom Hardy, and he's on the run from these guys from this nameless corporation that is after him.
And, right. Yeah.
And he goes in between these two, and he gets stuck in between these two buildings as he's trying to escape. And just looking at that, because, like, there's that thing in dreams where it's that fear of getting of the walls.
But that was a dream.
That wasn't? No, that was reality.
No, that was real.
And then as soon as he pops out, like, Ken Watanabe just shows up out of nowhere and, like, saves him.
Yeah, which with Tom Hardy walking out. Yeah, I always wondered about that, because I remember seeing that shot in the trailer where he's crawling between the walls, and I remember it kind of took my breath away, because I'm thinking, like, oh my God, like, that fear of being crushed, because I've had that before.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's Nolan fucking with our brains, because, like, you don't notice it the first time, but when you watch it again the second time, you sort of pick up all these little hints, and, like, people think, oh, my... might be the real world, cause the top that Leonardo DiCaprio has, the only way he can tell whether he's in the real world or in a dream world is that he spins the top. And if it's in a dream world, yeah, if he's in a dream,
right, the top will keep going. Yeah.
And if he's in the real world, it'll just topple. And I just kept thinking about this, like, what if he could possibly dream it just falling over? Like, I mean, in dreams, you could do anything, really.
And that's a good... My brother was actually reading... I think it was the actual next day, he was on IMDb, and there was a forum thread that was 55 pages long. And one of the comments he had read was the reason the top started to topple at the end was because he was dreaming, but he accepted that as his reality.
Yes.
So, like you said, if he wanted to believe that he was dreaming, he would keep it spinning. But once he, you know, if he wanted it to be real, it would fall.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I really I want to see this movie again so bad.
Yeah,
and I want it on DVD so bad because I seriously will watch it once a day, at least, for about a week straight.
Yeah. I pretty much could do that, too.
God. Like, I have not, I don't think I've ever seen a movie like this.
No.
I watched the trailer the other night. I actually played it for my dad because my dad didn't get a chance to see it. And I sat there watching the trailer, and all I could think about is, I got to fucking see this movie again. I was watching all the scenes going by, and it's, fuck, every single, there's not a single scene in the entire movie that doesn't grab you.
Mm.
Nothing. Like, right from the start, right to the end, everything is so clever. And funny how you're building on, you know, the thought of, you know, you think it's a dream world. There's also, and I always wondered this, when he goes to recruit Ellen Page, right, for the architect, I thought about it afterwards and thinking, how convenient that he finds the perfect architect for what he wants to accomplish in this job. And it seemed like there were so many things that were so convenient.
Yeah.
That's a major thing
with the movie.
Yeah. Every person was perfect at their job. Mm. You know, Tom Hardy was the perfect manipulator, and, you know, Gordon Levitt was...
There is a flaw there in the fact that they missed the first kick.
Yes, there is. And see, that's the thing, and that's where you start to draw. There's your...
God damn it!
It makes you think.
Yeah. Fuck this movie.
Another thing, like, in the movie, it says, like, in the scene where... Leonardo DiCaprio and Ellen Page, they're talking in front of a cafe. They're just, you know, automatically there. You think it's the real world. And he pretty much says, like, oh, how did you get here? And that's what I, like, if you know about dreams, is that, and he's right too, nobody knows how dreams begin. You're in the middle of it. You know, at the middle and the end, but you never know the beginning. And that's, if you look back over the movie, like they're in this, like, both, Leo and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, they're already doing a job on Ken Watanabe's character. And, like, we don't know the outcome before that one, like, why they're there or why is the company wanting them to work. Or this nameless company, like, you keep hearing them, though, the corporation, but you never... You never know who these guys are, and they're already doing this thing, and there's no... like beginning, like setting up doing that job. So that's interesting in the way that possibly that reality is possibly a dream. Like, there's this, it just does my head in this movie. It's just so much stuff.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring that up real quick. When he's going to each of the different floors, going through the same moments, you know, but he can't change them. The movie starts out how it ends, and he's talking to him at the table, and instantly clothes change.
Yeah.
And then it starts with them chasing Ken Watanabe's character.
Yeah.
He's sitting there at the table with him, and then just like that, everything changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm getting lost in words because I'm trying to think of a, you know, some form of, you know, explanation for certain things. But it's just, it was absolutely incredible. And one thing I want to say is that I had very little respect for Leonardo DiCaprio. No. You got to let me finish.
No.
For many years I had no respect for DiCaprio as an actor, but ever since The Departed and moving on from there, he has grown into one of the most fantastically brilliant actors working today. And my God, did he sell this movie.
Yeah.
His character was phenomenal. His interactions with everyone, the way he explains everything, his own dream state when he's with Marion, and who was also fucking fucking fantastic in this as well. She actually gave me some of the like the chilling moments of the film. I'm sure you guys know which ones I'm referring to. Like when she spots Ellen Page in the elevator, and it's like, oh, fucking this dead, you know, glaring stare and all that. But no, I thought the casting and the acting in the movie was what really sold it, as much as the visuals, you know, visuals in the story. So everything was so powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I still haven't really made up my mind because I need to watch it like another billion times. But I'm kind of leaning towards the, like, the character that Marion played. I think some of the things that she has to say, I think, hold more of the truth about what's really going on with the movie. And the movie itself, it is about Cobb. Is it Cobb?
Yeah, Cobb.
Cobb, yeah. That Leo plays. It's all about him. This is why we don't get much of the character development with the other characters, because it's not about them as such. It is all about him.
Many people complained about that, and I disagree with all of them.
Yeah, to me, it's his movie. Why do we need to know more than we do about these characters?
Yeah, we know who they are. We know what their expertise is. We know who they are in relation to his character.
Yeah.
But it's never about him. It's never about them.
It's not about them. It's about him. And I think that it's important to listen to the things that, like, Marion's character has to say, and especially, like, what ends up happening to her, like how she jumps off the thing.
There's another thing right there, like possibly the real world could be Dreamscape. Like, why is she on the other side of the building? Yeah,
everything about that doesn't add up. It is like it is a dream, and I think she got out of the dream. That's one thing that I think I'm certain of.
To be honest with you, I just assumed that she planned the whole thing and rented the room across the building.
Well, you could
easily argue that, but
see, that's the whole point.
There's certain things in this movie that we have mentioned about things just being so convenient. Yeah. But I think it's all hinting about the dream state. But yeah, again, I have to watch, like, I got to watch it again. But
and then, you know, like Cillian Murphy's character, like, he's so open to the idea of everything that's happening, even though he's just been introduced to it for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that, okay, they've invaded my mind. I'm going to trust this guy. I'm going to do whatever he says, and I'm going to do whatever these people say. And it's the convenience.
Yeah.
You know, and oh my fuck, there's another piece of the story that was brilliant. Everything.
Fuck. Yeah. Another thing is when he sees Michael Caine, there's a line that you don't think much of it the first time, but when you watch it again, it's like Michael Caine just says to him when he sees Leo for the first time, it's like, come back to reality.
Hmm.
Yeah. And that sort of, like, you think, oh, just, you know, stop daydreaming about your wife. But when you think about it, could it mean like he's saying, come out of this dream that you're in?
Yeah.
Back to the real
world. There's a lot of
things. And that's what makes it so awesome, is that it's so, you're not paying attention to these things when you're watching it, because you don't know how it's going to end. And then once you do, it's like, fuck, I got to see it again.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it again yet, so I go.
Yeah, I hopefully I can soon, but it's funny to me that a lot of people comparing it to The Matrix, but
I don't agree with that.
For me, The Matrix, if you just watch the first one, forget the other two. If you watch The Matrix, it makes perfect sense as to what's going on. I don't understand why people have such a hard time understanding the movie. Inception is so much more than that. It's so different than that.
It's nothing like
The Matrix.
The Matrix is so easy to understand. I've never understood that. Except for the fucking last movie, but the Revolutions. But
the architect crap.
Yeah, this will be the sixth version. What the fuck? What are you smoking? But no, you're absolutely right. Inception is far more complicated and far deeper. You know, there were times at the end when they were doing the job and everything was happening. There were times that I had to remind myself, oh, my God, I forgot. This is another level of the dream. you know, like when they're crashing the van into the, you know, off the bridge into the river, I'm like, wait, oh no, this isn't the real world. This is the dream. This is, you know, this is the first level. And I'm like, oh my God, all these different things. And it's just so awesome. You're so immersed in it.
And I love how he went with, he was trying to drive home the fact that one, what was it, like 1 second was like 10 minutes when, yes, when the van was falling. And he showed for just a second, and then he'd go back to what was going on and show 10 minutes of that, and then go just a second to the van and go back to 10 minutes. It was just, oh God, it was fucking amazing.
It was.
Two amazing things about the film to me. Number one, the anti-gravity fight scene.
Oh,
fuck yeah.
That was just awesome. And I was like, it just made me think, man, I wish I had an anti-gravity scene. I could be flying around too.
Yeah.
And I just keep thinking, because like I was reading somewhere, Louis Leterrier, who did Transporter 2 and The Incredible Hulk, he's doing a movie called Gravity. And it's just going to be taken, like a Taken-esque story, but in a world where there's no gravity. So I'm going to think, oh man, it's going to be 90 minutes of that. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's actually a very stupid premise, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but it'll be like just
couldn't happen.
Probably couldn't, but it sounds awesome though. In the, you know, having chase scenes and fight scenes and anti-gravity, but
that will be. But I'll tell you what, it'll probably be called one of the worst movies of all time, because any person who's been to school or watched The Magic School Bus knows that when the Earth stops spinning, it's got nothing to do with gravity. The Earth spinning has nothing to do with it. It's the mass of the planet. That's it. You know, I don't know. I fucking hated the idea from the moment I heard it.
They'll probably rewrite it.
Yeah,
but
somehow.
The fights, yeah, side of it. And like I said, the fight scene, completely awesome. And also Hans Zimmer's amazing score.
Oh, the soundtrack is just awesome.
Batman's a genius.
I love Hans Zimmer. I love the man. Like, he's my favorite composer after John Williams. All his scores are always amazing.
Yes, they are.
Oh, really?
I just wanted to call the movie Bwong from the trailer.
Although I think he didn't do the trailer really cool music.
No, he didn't. That's Zach Hemsey.
Well, actually, well, it's interesting, though, because, like, there were times in the movie where the actual score did sound similar to, like, the actual trailer music.
It did.
Like, especially when it crashed, when the van crashes the water, you had the boom.
Yeah.
Then, boom. But
no, you know what? It was amazing from start to finish, and even at, you know, 2 hours and 28 minutes, it never felt long. I didn't want it to end, and I thought it probably had one of the most heartbreaking moments like ever. Even though it wasn't nothing tragic ever happened, but when Leo is explaining to Ellen what happened when himself and Marion went into that induced dream together,
yeah,
and even though they were asleep for only an hour, it felt like 50 years for how deep into their subconscious they went. And he, you know, revealed the secret that he had implanted Inception. He had performed Inception and planted the idea in her head that none of this was real, and it haunted her.
And when she came out, she thought, like, the real world was in fact still the dream.
Exactly. And she would scare the children, and she think that the kids aren't real and that they've never left, and it just tortures her mind. And it's like, fucking, I was sitting there, I was in awe of the storytelling. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Yeah.
Mm.
And everyone sold it.
Yeah. And it's good to
see Tom Berenger sold it.
I was just about to say, it's good to see Tom Berenger back in the movie.
He is. Oh, yeah, it is.
And I love that Christopher Nolan always brings out, like, some, you know, somebody who used to be famous back in the into movies. Like, he had Rutger Hauer in Batman Begins, David Bowie.
David Bowie's character was.
And Eric Roberts and Anthony Michael Hall in The Dark Knight. Like, the only logical step now is that he has to bring Yahoo Sirius in the next Batman movie.
Who?
I think you should die 1,000 deaths, Bede.
I think you should bring Tommy Wiseau.
Actually,
oh my god!
Yes. Oh, hi, bros.
Oh, hi, bros. You're tearing me apart.
You're lying. I never blew up your Batmobile.
I never hit Robin.
Oh, don't you know Robin?
I know. Chris promised us
no fucking Robin.
You know, it'd be awesome if, like...
Chris I don't think anyone wants to be fucking Robin, but anyway, B, continue.
No, that's... I was going to say...
you don't like Chris O'Donnell there, Mercy?
I did when I was a kid, but, you know, that's another story.
If Christopher Nolan had a bit of sense of humor for the next Batman movie, he should have, like, Michael Keaton show up in a cameo.
Oh, my God.
The man needs somebody needs to restart his career. Somebody needs to say... That'd be this hilarious.
I really don't know what happened to him. I really don't know. Him
and Michael Biehn. Like, Michael Biehn should show up in the next Batman movie.
Michael Biehn should be the villain.
Mm.
Yeah.
But he was going to be the villain in Avatar.
That would have been epic. But I think they chose the right guy for Avatar.
Yeah, but he kind of played a similar character in the Abyss. So I suppose it, you know, it's being typecast in a way.
James Cameron's undisputed masterpiece, in my opinion. But
we've kind of gone a little off topic.
Hey, that's all right.
As we do on the Super Podcast.
It wasn't me.
Yeah, I don't even know who it was. But anyway.
I don't know. It was probably you, Nick. It's always you.
It's always me. God damn it. No, but then I always bring us back, don't I? I don't even know how to sum up Inception. I have to see it again, and I want to see it again after that, and again, and again, and again. And Nolan has definitely written his name in the history books in terms of storytelling. Yeah. I think he's better than Kubrick. I think he's better than Hitchcock. You know what? I think all of them are overrated, to be honest with you. I think they all had a style, but I think Nolan has created his own.
You can send your hate mail to Nick at...
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think... Well, you're talking to a guy who thinks 2001 is one of the most overrated films of all time, but I don't know. I think it's fucking boring, but... I said in the MFC the other day, it's the ultimate sleeping pill, but... I'm not even going to go into there, but...
I just thought of it. The perfect casting choice for the next Batman movie, an actor who needs who needs their career resurrected, Steve Guttenberg. Christopher Nolan.
Please go away.
Christopher Nolan, make it happen.
No. I do think
I think Bruce Campbell deserves a better shot.
He's got Sam Raimi for that.
Yeah, but he wasn't given the love he deserved.
Before the subject completely got changed, I was going to say, I think Nolan should cast me as Catwoman.
Well,
I'm just saying it and putting it out there.
You like the PVC, yeah?
You
will be putting it out there if you dress up like Catwoman.
We'll be there.
Yeah.
Cast me as Mr. Freeze so I could do a lot of ice puns like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I will punch you in the face. Well.
Let's kick some ice.
I think Nick should play Poison Ivy.
Oh, I'll play Poison.
I just want to see you in a sexy outfit.
You know what would be an awesome scene if, like, Christopher Nolan cast Joel Schumacher as, like, a hoodlum and he just gets punched in the face by Batman?
Actually, she That's cast him brilliant. As Alfred. He's old enough now, fuck. But no, I would gladly. I want to play Bane. I just want to make stupid growling noises throughout and flex my, you know, muscles that are tiny compared to his. I just want to say that, like throughout the entire fucking movie.
I'll be sure to send Christopher Nolan this casting section of the podcast.
I think J.P. Lee Curtis should be in the next Batman. I don't know.
I bags Vicky Vale.
Oh.
You want to play Vicky Vale?
Yeah, why not? I mean, if bloody...
Want to play an annoying blonde?
Well, if Cillian Murphy can play a woman in Peacock, I think I can play a woman in the next Batman.
Yeah, but Cillian Murphy is really, really pretty.
He was in Sunshine.
I'm not saying that you're not pretty or anything, but...
You're saying I look ugly.
Yes, you are.
I'm just saying that he looks really pretty, that he can just somehow get away with wearing drag and there not really being any kind of issue.
Oh, I suppose you're probably
but
right.
But I think if you were to dress up as a woman and that beard that you've got going, I just don't think that'd work somehow.
Well, I haven't got a beard at the moment, so...
Oh, interesting.
I haven't had the beard.
Oh, well, the last photos I saw of you had a beard and you were on a pole and it was very disturbing.
That was like last year while I was in bloody Munich.
I got it. I know who should play the Riddler. Woody Harrelson.
Oh, that's actually good. I like that.
I'm not sure about the Riddler, but Woody Harrelson would rock in any sort of role in a Batman movie.
Here comes Batman. Yep, better get going.
See, that'd be awesome. Not with you playing Woody Harrelson there.
I'll play Woody.
Yeah, I think they should cast Kurt Russell.
Well, what's a
you have Kurt Russell in everything.
Yes, he should. He should even be in the Barbie movies.
In the what movies?
Barbie movies.
Kurt Russell should star in, like, if they ever make The Dark Knight Returns into a movie, Kurt Russell should play Batman in that.
I can't imagine him playing Batman.
I don't see why not. It's better than Frank Miller's idea of having Sylvester Stallone play Batman.
Kurt Russell can do whatever.
He can do me if he likes, which, you know, I'm sure he would.
I'm sure he'd love to do you.
I think I'm having one of those Inception dreams. I need to go into his dreams and plant that thought in there.
Well, you know what? Ellen Page and Marion are welcome in my head any day, so... Yeah, so you can have yours.
I gotta say this about Inception. The men in this movie were pretty good looking.
Yeah, even as a guy.
It was a dream come true for you, Marcy.
Oh my god, I'm just sitting there like, okay, Leo looks good. And then freaking Joseph shows up in this like really cool outfits that he wears. And I'm thinking, damn, even he's like really, really hot. And then Tom Hardy, and it's like, oh my god.
Orgasm.
That man is hot. And then, of course, Cillian shows up and he's always so pretty, even if he's wearing a suit.
Now, come on, Mars. We all know you had the hots for Tom Berenger.
Oh, my God.
You know so you hot. Wanted Ken Watanabe.
Oh, Ken Watanabe.
When you're aware.
I totally understood everything he said. Except I can't pronounce his name.
Ken Watanabe.
Watanabe.
Who cares?
Watanabe.
Wow, you sound like an American right there.
I'm Canadian, goddammit.
it was the response, not the tone of voice.
Ken Watanabe, I don't know. The guy who...
Not gonna work here anymore, that's for sure.
True. One who everybody can't seem to understand for some... I thought
his accent isn't that bad. I understood him perfectly well.
I know, I don't have any problem with him. I never have. Even in, Letters from Iwo Jima, I thought, you know, he was very understandable.
I don't know, some people were just...
Never had a problem with him.
Just, I don't know. I think sometimes people with accents just can't pick them up very well.
As some people, that's true.
Yeah.
Some people.
Ken Watanabe should be in more movies, that's all I'm going to say.
He's a great actor.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised to see that dude that was in Avatar and Drag Me to Hell was in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
As the chemist. He was pretty cool. Good. He had a hard time driving that van, though.
He did.
I love when he does that flip and he looks back at everybody. He's like, did you see that?
And they're all asleep.
Like, asleep. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And
That was actually one of my favorite scenes. You know when Gordon Levitt is tying everybody up in the dream?
Oh, he could tie me up. I mean, yeah, continue.
You gotta think to yourself, like, could you imagine being Levitt during those scenes? He's like, I'm at a point in the career now where I'm tying up Leonardo DiCaprio, Cillian Murphy, Ellen Page, and going through all this fucking list of people. Is like, you know what? I've made it.
Yeah, pretty much.
That place. I'm saving the day.
Yeah, that his whole scene in that it was at level 2 of the dream was just so amazing.
Ooh, that's getting geeky there. Level 2. That's true. There, well, yeah, it was level 2.
Yeah, my favorite part of the movie was when Tom Hardy got naked. I mean, that was the wrong movie.
I think you're thinking Bronson.
I was thinking of Bronson. He's like naked a lot in that movie.
I think you were putting the two together. You were just
he was naked a little bit too much in Bronson.
Hey, well, I wasn't complaining, but.
And now
I love
playing,
how.
And yeah, now he's playing Mad Max. Awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, he's probably going to own that role too.
I don't know if it's just me, but is anyone just a bit annoyed that there's not enough Australian actors in the new Mad Max movie? I'm just saying.
I don't care. Starring Tom Hardy, that's good enough for me.
Oh, well, Charlize Theron is in it, isn't she?
Actually, they're out there shooting near Broken Hill where they shot the original movie, so I'm probably the closest I'll get to Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron.
Well, I'm going to, like, stalk Tom Hardy, and I'm going to just plant thoughts in his dreams too.
Well, you see, like, as a guy, I can't say that I'm going to stalk, like, Ellen Page or anything, because that would just be creepy. So, go for that. But Marianne sported some amazing cleavage in Inception, and that's all I'm going to say.
She is an absolute just. Yep. Oh, I can't even describe how beautiful she looks and what a great actress she is.
Oh, yeah, she's brilliant. I loved her in every movie I've seen her in. She's just a great actress.
Mm.
Which I hated her at one point when she first started, when she won that surprise Oscar. I thought she beat out.
She deserved it.
I saw the movie and I realized she deserved it afterwards. But at the time, I had no freaking idea who she was.
Well, nobody did.
No, and we're like, what the? Who the fuck is this chick? And then, you know, and I think that's the year she beat out Ellen Page for, you know, when she did Juno.
Mm. I bet in between scenes where they weren't shooting, it's like, I won the Oscar over you. Ha.
I don't think she would be that mean. she doesn't seem like she'd be mean in real life.
She's French, so... No, I'm joking.
You're going to hold that against me.
Wow.
I'm only joking.
Is it playing American Day today or what?
No, I'm only joking.
Nobody likes the French.
No, I'm only joking. Don't take offense, French fans of the podcast. But actually, I'll say this. Did anyone else laugh when... Because whenever they did the Kinks in the movie, they played the Edith Piaf song. And
yeah, I was thinking, is this a strange reference? But then Christopher Nolan said it's actually just a massive coincidence.
Yeah, I bet it was a massive
coincidence. And I'm thinking, but she played Edith Piaf and then they're playing her music.
Yeah, I just...
It's like, how can that be a freaking coincidence, dude?
I know, I'm just sitting there. As soon as the song played it, and it was like, okay, it's sung by Edith Piaf. Marion Cotillard played her in a movie, and I'm just sitting there giggling to myself.
Yeah. I felt the same way, like, the first time you hear it, and I'm like, yeah.
And I was pissed off that there wasn't enough sex dreams in this movie. As we're,
well, like, if it was a movie about me, that's all those dreams would be about.
Well, I've only had one.
Yeah, there wasn't enough life
coverage to that movie.
I mean, this is probably revealing too much, but don't ask me why, because I don't know how my mind works, but I always have weird sex dreams.
I bet you do.
Define weird, or should
but I... But they're about people. I don't want to be dreaming about like that.
Oh, yeah, you had a Russell Brand one.
Ew! Why? Why, Brian? Why? I think I'd rather have a sex dream about Jonah Hill over Russell Brand.
At least it'd be funny.
Exactly. Disturbing, but weird.
What about Tommy Wiseau?
Oh my god, I want to dream about him.
It would never happen because when Darcy has dreams of Tommy Wiseau, she's just being attacked by a wildebeest, so that's just...
Being serious, since seeing Inception, I've had, like, some of the weirdest dreams ever.
Funny, I haven't had a single one, but before I saw Inception, I had many strange dreams.
Same here. I dreamt I was in the Expendables. I was, like, fighting along...
Yeah, I have that dream all the time. Come on, Sly, let's get him!
Midnight screening already. I wish.
Don't worry, it'll be here in a few weeks, so we'll have to wait.
Yeah, I think we get it a day early or something.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Oh, hell yeah, bitches.
Can you believe Scott Pilgrim getting incredible reviews?
Do we have to bring this up every single podcast? You're not welcome to the Scott Pilgrim podcast.
Come on, it's like a it's a staple for me.
Yeah, you got to mention Michael Cera.
Dun, 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 dun.
Did I say something?
He's holding back the rage as we speak.
Yeah. Just think about Tommy Wiseau.
I just, I'm going to unplug my mic now. Just keep the rant.
Yay!
We should probably wrap this up.
I fucking hate Michael Cera.
Yeah. We'll end the podcast on that.
God damn it!
Nick really hates Michael Cera.
I do!
I think
but I love Inception.
The sequel to Scott Pilgrim versus the World is going to be Michael Cera versus Nick Bosworth.
Awesome. And I will win.
Yes.
I will pay Buddy to say that.
So. Yeah. One thing,
you will be by my side.
One thing I want to note, which is not on the Michael Cera topic, it's actually on the Inception topic. For like a week, I think, or not quite a week, Inception is sitting at number 3 on the IMDb top 250.
It's at number 3 already?
It's been number 3 for almost a week.
Wasn't it like 9.3 out of 10 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. It's number 3 and it's been sitting there for a while.
Oh,
it's been sitting there for a while.
And The Dark Knight, I think that was at number 1 for a while after it came out, but it's now sitting at number 12.
I think Inception will probably be like in the top 25 by once the hype and everything sort of dies down.
Yeah, because I think because Inception has been such like a breath of fresh air with the string of movies we've gotten. Like I think everyone's just really happy to have such a unique movie, but I think that it will die down a little bit.
It's only number 3 because of votes. It's actually the same rating as Shawshank and Godfather at 9.1.
Mm. Yeah.
So technically it is tied for number 1 right now.
Mm.
Well, it definitely deserves every bit of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that wraps up our very strange podcast.
Wasn't that strange?
Well, I think I kind of admitted a few things that are a bit odd, but anyway.
Not as much as me.
Well, nothing beats having watched Hannah Montana the movie.
Pederast.
Good God.
I know. It's going to be... Everyone's going to use that against me from now
indeed.
On.
Indeed.
Damn straight.
He's a pederast, Marcy.
He's a pederast. What's a pederast?
Good the fuck up, Donnie.
Okay. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, wait. We forgot to do one thing.
Oh, what was that?
We forgot to do, like, the famous lines from Predator, like, get to the chopper!
I don't think anything can beat that somehow. Oh,
shut us up! It's all bullshit!
Get the chopper! Stick around!
You are one ugly motherfucker.
Get to the Predators, too. Other than that, want some candy?
I'll do my Predator.
Oh, my favorite from Predators, too. Okay, pussy face. I was like, this is the greatest movie ever. When Danny calls
my God.
The
pussy face.
It's awesome.
I can totally see the resemblance.
Oh, absolutely.
That is a fucked up vajayjay.
Vajayjay.
That's a bajingo. But, what other Predators had some really funny lines, too?
I've gone blank on them all. You son of a bitch. I ain't got time to bleed.
Okay, every word that comes out of Jesse Ventura's mouth in that movie is classic. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Bring back time.
You'd be a damned sexual tyrannosaurus just like me.
Bunch of slack jawed faggots around here.
One of my favorite moments, him and Carl Weathers in the helicopter, spits on Carl's foot. And I love how Carl, come closer. And the first thing Jesse does is he fucking leans his chin out. Like, come on, give it a shot. Because I will fucking lay you out. I love Jesse. I honestly think if and I think we discussed this before, if they had taken Jesse and faced him off with Arnie, I think he would have slaughtered Arnie in that particular time in their lives.
Oh, yeah.
Jesse was a killer back then.
That's why they called him the buddy.
He was the man.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
It's a pleasure.
It fucking better be.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
And,
awesome as always.
And I think...
You're tearing me apart, Lisa!
You spoiled it! I was going to say that Tommy Wiseau had some closing words, but, you know, you made him say them already.
Well, he's got like 10,000 quotes.
Well, that's true, but, you know.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Anyway... yes, until next time, we're all going to hell, I think.
Especially me.
The bus.
Goodbye.
Pray for our souls, everyone.
Ciao for now.
See you, everyone.
Later. Bye, guys.